band thing as a
Hello,
hoax. There's not been a
everyone. We're
single book
listening
banned
to
in the
the
state of
Twitter
Florida. You can
space
go
with
buy or
Ron
read whatever book you
DeSantis.
want. What we have done is empowered parents with the ability to review the curriculum, to know what books are being used in school, and then to ensure that those books match state standards and are age and developmentally appropriate. So, for example, parents have flagged books in schools that, for example, teach middle school kids how to use sex apps, that provide graphic depictions of sex acts and sex toys for people as young as fifth grade. And so clearly that is not appropriate, to be in a middle school classroom. And so parents object and the schools take them out. I did a press conference that we called Exposing the Book Ban Hoax. And before I had the parents come up, before I spoke, I just played the video that had the images of the books that the parents had objected being in their kids' classroom. And the local news had to cut the feed because they said it was too graphic. Well, if it's too graphic for the 6 o'clock news, how is it okay for a sixth grader or a fifth grader? And so nothing's being banned. They're basically ensuring that we make curation choices.
It's very long-winded, very painful.
The racial history, we eliminated critical race theory from our K through 12 schools. That was the right thing to do. In other words, we're not going to take a kid who comes in at 6 years old and say they're an oppressor or oppressed based on what their race is. That's divisive. That's wrong. We're also not going to be teaching people to hate their country. But what we are going to do is teach the accurate history. So, in the same bill that banned critical race theory, we required teaching thoroughly about racial discrimination that occurred in American history, and Florida's history standards require all of those.
Ron has been speaking half of his time on black people.
To be taught, and will continue to do that. So I think what you see is the left and the media colluding on this. They don't want to actually defend what it is that we are actually legislating or regulating. So they create these hoaxes that somehow you don't want kids to learn that slavery existed in America, which is preposterous. No one actually defends the offending material. And the question is why are there people intent on trying to get this stuff into the classroom? And I think it's part of a political agenda. So our mantra in Florida is this purpose of the schools is education, not indoctrination. Yes, I think it's very inappropriate to have sexually explicit material in a fifth grade library, 100%. But it's also the case that if you're focusing on that type of instruction, there's an opportunity cost involved. Why shouldn't we be doing more on science or reading or math? And so I think we're getting it right. And I think almost invariably, and Chris Rufo's had to deal with this too, when they're trying to craft these narratives, if you just peel back the onion, you realize that this is something they're manufacturing.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I was actually under the impression that there were some books banned. So this is news to me.
And they actually, there was a the one this week was that Miami-Dade County took a book that was about like poems from I think like Biden's inauguration, and they moved it from elementary school library to middle school library. The media tried to act like somehow this is being banned, and you actually had Miami-Dade County Public Schools spokesperson have to come out and say there's nothing that's been banned or removed. It was basically just determined that this particular book was better suited for middle school. And so they put it in the middle school media center. And the media tries to act like somehow that is offending something with a book ban. So, but I think part of the reason that they're doing that is because you know there is actually a movement to ban books from like Amazon and some of these others. California, some municipalities have banned things like To Kill a Mockingbird. What they're trying to do is see if some of these books pass a woke test. And if they don't, they are going against some of those books. Whereas in Florida, you can buy whatever book you want. But that's a different question than what would be appropriate for a third grader or what would be appropriate for a sixth grader. Government, by
No
definition, has
professional
to make
host
those
to
choices.
ensure the rhythm of the show. David Sacks sucks. People can't intervene. That's the point where you want to intervene and make it more efficient.
A friend of mine, Tim Urban, who has a blog called Wait, Wait, But Why, and is really one of the most reasonable people on earth and one of the most reasoned people I've ever met, had a lot of trouble actually publishing his book, simply because it debated sort of sacred cows of woke ideology. But incredibly reasonable book. So that is the kind of de facto book banning and de facto book suppression that I see quite a lot of, is that the publishers are unwilling to take risks.
Let me shift gears here for a second, because I know we're running out of time. We're supposed to end, I think, around 4, but 4 Pacific. But thank you for giving us a little bit of extra time here, Governor. Shifting gears to a major federal issue, immigration. We see I've seen these videos on social media and on TV. Just insanity at the border. What is your take on what's going on there, and how would you address that as president?
Well, I'd reverse what Biden's doing. You need to shut the border down. You should not be entertaining these asylum claims for people crossing illegally. Now, asylum is a legitimate thing, but these are people that when they come, I mean, they're being persecuted. These people come in overwhelmingly are economic migrants that are coming across many other different countries. They should be applying for asylum there if they were, you know, truly qualifying for that, but they're not. They know that if they just show up at the southern border, and these are people all over the world that are coming illegally, they know that they will get a sheet of paper saying, okay, come back for a court date in 3 years, and they get released to the interior of our country. It's an absolutely insane system. So we'll stop that. We will move on day one by declaring a national emergency. We will construct a border wall. We will make sure we have remain in Mexico and that we're not entertaining those claims in that way. And we really need to hold the Mexican drug cartels accountable, because they're facilitating a lot of this migration. They obviously make money off of it. They treat a lot of these people very horribly as they're trafficking them through Mexico and into the United States. And of course, the cartels have been responsible for moving massive amounts of fentanyl into this country. And that's killing tens of thousands of Americans every year now. And what they're doing is they lace the other types of drugs with the fentanyl. So you may have like a teenage kid doing something they probably shouldn't do, but in prior generations would not have been fatal. And now if it's laced with fentanyl, you know, these kids can overdose and die. And so mothers are losing kids as a result of this fentanyl epidemic. And I just don't think you could allow these criminal organizations to continue poisoning our population. So it'll be a day one issue. We will bring overwhelming amount of resources to deal with it. And we are going to stop this insanity once and for all.
There's a, I think, follow-up question on immigration from Steve Dace, who is a national radio personality and I think an important commentator in the great state of Iowa. Steve, do you have a comment or question? I think you just need to unmute.
See the crap? This
if,
can't be.
If Steve can unmute, then we'll go ahead and ask him.
This
for a
cannot
question.
Be
not,
Elon.
You
we'll, must we'll make Twitter here. Space better. People are
right,
fucking
three,
lost.
Three, two, going, gone.
I'm there.
All right, on sorry,
the,
Steve.
I'm there, guys.
Oh, there
he is.
All right.
My bad. First of all, I want to echo what Congressman Massey said to Elon. Elon, if I put down money on January 1st, 2022, that Twitter was going to be the last bastion of free speech on Earth, brother, I'd be about as rich as you are on that bet right now. I mean, it's incredible what you have done here and the restoration of a lot of accounts of people that were truth tellers and were ran from here for telling the truth. I saw a meme the other day that said, of course, you have scientific consensus when you censor all the scientists who disagree. So I wanted to just say, first and foremost, on behalf of a lot of grateful people around the country and the world, really, thank you very much for that and the investment you made in that cause. Thank you. A question is a follow-up to you, Governor, on this very issue with immigration. We have heard a lot over the years, lock her up, drain the swamp, going to build a beautiful wall, Mexico's going to pay for it, and crowds cheered, and everybody loved it, and brands got built, and nothing got done. What is the bottom line assurance that you can make to the people that are listening right now, all over the world and all over the country, that you can actually do the agenda that you just articulated when others tweeted about it and talked about it, but then couldn't actually follow through?
It's a great question because I share that frustration. I think even my worst critics in Florida will acknowledge when I tell people I'm going to do something, I don't make promises or say I'm going to do something lightly. I've thought it through, and I know that I am going to follow through on what I tell people I'm going to do. So this is one, there will be follow through. Number two, I understand the different leverage points that you would have under Article 2 of the Constitution. I studied that a lot at becoming governor about Florida's Constitution, doing the same thing for the federal Constitution. And you've got to know how to use your leverage to advance what you're trying to accomplish. So, for example, you know, there's leverage that we can use vis-a-vis Mexico that I think presidents have not been willing to do, I think sometimes for political purposes. But I'll look at, okay, what are all the variety of options we can do? Which buttons can I push?
This is what Trump was saying 6 years ago.
A conclusion once and for all. We had Hurricane Ian come through Southwest Florida, Category 4 plus storm, September of 2022, and it did a lot of damage. But one of the things it did, it knocked out a bridge going from the mainland to Pine Island, and it severed the Sanibel Causeway in three different locations. And the locals were being told it's going to take 6 months to get that stuff repaired. And so they came to me, even though these were not state-owned bridges, and they said, can you help us? And I said, okay, I'll do it. So I got my guys together. I said, listen, no bureaucracy, no red tape, and no excuses. Get it done. We need to open these bridges back. Pine Island Bridge reopened 3 days later. Sanibel Causeway opened 2 weeks after that, way, way ahead of schedule, because we wouldn't take no for an answer, and we wanted to make sure we got it done. So for me, it is not a campaign slogan that you get in and then forget about it. I'm, as an American citizen, if I wasn't running, this would be an issue that bothers me. I've put a lot of my capital as Florida governor involved in combating illegal immigration. We banned sanctuary cities my first year. We just did a strong anti-illegal immigration bill in Florida that's working. I put marine assets in the Florida Keys to help the Coast Guard repel boats from places like Haiti. I had people at the southern border right now helping Texas, and we've even been able to relocate illegal aliens to places like Martha's Vineyard. So I don't think any governor has probably gone out of his way to do more to try to make an impact on this issue. And I'm not going to take no for an answer. And I think our voters are sick of the empty promises. They want to see action.
Thank you, Governor.
Well, Governor, I saw the cover of Time Magazine this week. And I think they were trying to do a negative story because they had you were sort of scowling in this portrait they made of you. And in the article, they call you they compared you to the Terminator. And I think they meant insult, but I thought it was kind of cool. I thought it was a good thing because I think we need a cool-headed, ruthless assassin to go in and basically take on the woke mob, take on our out-of-control government, and take on problems like the ones at the border. So, again, I thought it made you sound great, even though that may not have been their intention.
Well, look, at the end of the day, this whole business that we're in is about producing results. I don't care about fanfare. You know, I'm the governor, like that is, I'm known, right? And I go around the state and everything. And people are very nice. And so, I mean, I appreciate the well wishes, but I don't need any of the fanfare. I don't need any adulation. I just know I'm in a position where I have a chance to make a difference, and I'm either doing it or I'm not. And I remember sitting at the desk in the state capitol my first day as governor 4.5 years ago. I looked around the room and I thought to myself, I don't know what SOB is going to succeed me in this chair, but they are not going to have anything to do because I'm getting all the meat off the bone. I am going to make sure that I'm leaning into issues and making an impact. And we have done that in the state of Florida, and I bring that exact attitude up to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Governor, I'd love to jump in and follow up on that. This is Chris Rufo. And you know, I've had the honor of working with you in the past few years on critical race theory, gender ideology, and the DEI bureaucracy. And what I've seen up close and personal is that while many conservative politicians going back decades have made headlines and got on television playing culture war, they never actually get anything done. And what you've done over the last few years is really
it's very empty. It's like nothingness. There's no content.
You eliminated the DEI bureaucracy in all of Florida's public universities. They'll be shut down completely. And I think what you've done is established a blueprint for fighting back against the left's long march of the institutions and making sure that those institutions reflect the value of Florida voters, not left-wing activists and the partisan press. So my question for you is, you know, D.C. is another animal. It's quite different, the scale of the federal government. And how are you going to deliver results? And what is your culture war strategy facing down the swamp in D.C.?
Well, some of it is similar in this respect. When we're taking on things like DEI, you get blowback from legacy media and the far left. But that's an example of an issue where they are out of step with the vast majority of Americans. It's not just Republicans. It's independents and a lot of Democrats. Because you think about if you're a parent and you've got kids, you want to know when they apply to college, they're going to be judged based on their merit. And they're not going to be roadkill in some type of woke Olympics where they didn't fit some category and so they're denied opportunity. They want to make sure that achievement matters. And so we get a lot of quiet support for a lot of those things. And so I think what I do, just because, look, I'm a blue-collar kid. I grew up in the Tampa Bay area working minimum wage to get through school. You know, my grandfather worked in the steel mill in Western Pennsylvania. I just know instinctively kind of what like normal people think about all this stuff. And I have a good sense of when the legacy media and the left are outside of where the average American is, because people want you to be using common sense. And things like DEI, I mean, when I was growing up, I think things were better because people were actually told you should try to get along. Now they're told you need to segregate. And it's just crazy that they're trying to do all this stuff. So by eliminating that, there's a lot of people that were really happy about that, including
still back
people
on
that
black
are not
segregation.
Traditional Republicans. And I think there's similar issues when you do in the federal level. It's also the case that there are some tools at the federal level that we don't necessarily have at the state level. For example, some of the problems with the university and the ideological capture, that didn't happen by accident, can trace back all the way to the accreditation cartels. Well, guess what? To become an accreditor, how do you do that? You've got to get approved by the U.S. Department of Education. So we're going to be doing alternative accreditation regimes where instead of saying you will only get accredited if you do DEI, you'll have an accreditor that will say, we will not accredit you if you do DEI. We want a colorblind, merit-based accreditation scheme. And so as president, controlling that agency, you can then approve other types of accreditation. So I think part of it is just knowing where are all the pressure points, how does it get to the point that we then see and that somebody like you will run a report on, like when you see some of the outrageous stuff that's generated in some sociology department at a university. That didn't just happen out of thin air. There's a reason why we got to that point. And I think that there are some tools with the federal government where you can push back and try to get these institutions moored in a more foundational direction about, hey, we're pursuing truth here and we're not here to try to impose one niche ideology on the entire student body.
Great. Shifting gears.
Dead air.
Dana Lash, you have a question or comment for the governor?
I do. And thank you both so much for your time, for joining us in a very new way. I really appreciate that. I think it's really cool. And for your support of free speech, too. And Elon, I have to say thank you for taking the arrows and for unthrottling the accounts of all of
us. It's not time for Elon praise. You have the future president, the supposedly future president.
Your unwavering support of Second Amendment rights. And you're on my program tomorrow. And I just got to say, you got my vote in the primary. So I appreciate it very much. You were talking about DEI just a minute ago. And I want to ask you both about this growing threat against natural rights and free enterprise. It's this threat of debanking. Now, I know that, you know, Elon, I've read so much about you and what you've gone through. You've called ESG criteria evil incarnate. Governor DeSantis, Florida, saw financially weaponized wokery earlier this year when Wells Fargo Bank dumped both the business and personal accounts of a very prominent and well-respected gun dealer in Florida. They'd been together for 25 years working with Wells Fargo, and they cited new ESG guidelines. Now, similar to the DOJ's previous Operation Choke Point, all these activists for various causes are using this regulatory guidance to debank what they consider to be politically incorrect businesses for the sake of risk management. Now, we say that our rights should not be infringed upon by the government, but what can and should be done about activist-guided financial institutions and these, you know, payment processors who are essentially cutting off law-abiding citizens and businesses?
Well, I think it's just, it's a fundamental issue that I think not enough conservatives have been wise to. I think more and more are. But at the end of the day, we have certain fundamental rights. And so maybe you're somebody that is, you know, really excited about your Second Amendment rights. And obviously, if the government comes in and infringes that, we know you blow the whistle on that. That's a problem. But what if Wall Street banks are colluding so that somebody can't function in that space, whether it's running a store or anything involving that? Your rights are still being infringed upon in that situation. And so I think this whole ESG movement is really trying to do through the financial sector what they could never achieve through the ballot box. And so they're trying to do an end run around the constitutional system, and they're really trying to change policy. They're trying to change society, and they're trying to change the scope of people's rights. And so in Florida, I just signed anti-ESG legislation, which said things like no ESG criteria in our pension fund. We got a $180 billion state pension fund. No social credit scores for consumers when they're going to bank. In other words, if you apply for a loan, that loan should be judged based on your creditworthiness, not whether you're genuflecting to the appropriate left-wing causes. But one thing we did do is we did provide protection against this debanking with the woke banking. No discrimination based on your religion and other things, which we know is happening. So I think it's a fundamental question, but we will not be a free society if major financial institutions can do through the economy what people could not achieve through the ballot box. Our rights will be restricted, will be the end result, and that's not healthy for a free country.
You know, as a follow-up to that, Governor, Dana mentioned Operation Choke Point, and that is a term that's very familiar to crypto companies in Silicon Valley and fintech companies. Basically, it refers to an effort by the federal government, including the SEC, to basically regulate blockchain and crypto companies out of existence. They really feel like they're being driven out of the country. And I'm not talking about scammy ones or the totally fake ones like FTX, but really high quality, good companies, including companies that are public like Coinbase. And these guys are basically begging the government for just a framework. They're just like, tell us how to operate legally and we'll do it. You know, I guess where do you come down on this? What is your view, I guess, broadly of Bitcoin and people's right to hold Bitcoin and to transact Bitcoin?
You have every right to do Bitcoin. The only reason these people in Washington don't like it is because they don't control it. And they're central planners and they want to have control over society. And so Bitcoin represents a threat to them. And so, as you're saying, they're trying to regulate it out of existence. Look, could Congress enact a statute to ban things like Bitcoin under the Constitution? They may be able to do it. I would oppose that. I think people should be able to do Bitcoin. But Congress has never addressed this in this fashion. And for the bureaucracy to just do it on their own and make it so people can't operate in that space, that's what we mean when we say we've got to return the government to the people's elected representatives, who are our voice to be able to make these decisions.
And the elected representatives are as corrupt as can be.
The ability to do things like Bitcoin. I think these are people that are sophisticated. They can make decisions. There's risks involved with it, but let them do that. I just do not have an itch to have to control everything that people may be doing in this space. And I think that the current regime clearly, they have it out for Bitcoin, and if it continues for another 4 years, you know, they'll probably end up killing it.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think that is the strong feeling of people in Silicon Valley who are in this space, and I think we'll be heartened to hear your answer on that. I mean, the weird thing is that, and there is a huge constituency of crypto Twitter, so for people who are maybe part of political Twitter who are wondering why we're talking about this, it really is has a big audience for this topic.
Dogecoin, too, I just want to emphasize.
Yeah. Bitcoin and Dogecoin. Yeah. So shout out to all the Doge fans out there. Yeah. But the weird thing is that this administration, they seem to want to ban Bitcoin, but they want to create a CBDC, which stands for a central bank digital currency. What's your take on that?
So we were the first state just last month. We actually got the Florida legislature to pass a law that says Florida does not recognize central bank digital currency, because some states were actually adding that to their uniform commercial code. You know, the federal government's studying this. We did the opposite and say we didn't. Now, the reason why we did that is because what the Federal Reserve has said is, well, you know, we're going to consult with Congress. We'll consult with the executive branch. We don't have a CBDC right now. And ideally, we would get authorization for Congress. Well, wait a minute. It's not ideally. You must get authorization from Congress. I don't think Congress would authorize it. So if they
use... All right. Enough of listening to this crap. Listen, Twitter Space are not very ideologically condensed. They are poorly hosted. The setup is very poor. There was 20 minutes at the beginning of this where they tried to run it from Elon Musk's Twitter account. 300,000 people approximately were in. And I was in, but I wasn't even hearing them. It was all silent. And so there was an empty Twitter space for 20 minutes for many times. And now even this Twitter space, detail is not available. People right now are having massive issues connecting to it. I was lucky to join it. I joined it among the first 500 people. And so I was probably at the top of the queue. So we were able to listen to it live, but I was lucky. I was trying on my phone. My phone wasn't working. A lot of people are reporting it wasn't working for them. The variation in voice levels is unbearable because of the stubborn approach of this Twitter crap space, shit space of Elon Musk, which doesn't allow desktop streaming and control of volume levels. So everyone is with their phone. So Ron DeSantis in Florida with his phone is not at the exact same angle as Elon Musk in California with his phone. And so you end up having variations of audio levels that I had to correct as I was playing it live. Twitter Space, Elon Musk, is a load of crap. It is the most unbearable, cheap chat space I've ever seen. It doesn't belong on the modern internet. And I know that the problem is, I know what you think it is. You think it is the platform where the future will be attracted, but you have so much work to do technically, Elon, before this becomes any interesting. The first being, have a web interface that doesn't require a phone, that can allow plugging professional audio. And then we'll begin talking, and then we can talk about improving how the guests are allowed to speak in, and then we could eventually get more professional hosting experience there. But a professional host will not want to do this crap because it's just not a technically interesting spot to speak to people. It always converges into these empty conversations, because it's being spammed by the presence of the centrist, whether it's the centrist on the right side or the left side. And it converges into these, oh yeah, we're doing the real things. And oh yeah, we have a different experience. And here I have developed a way to really do the real thing. And so you can expect from me that I'll do the real thing. Nothing is being said. Nothing is being discussed. The hosts are not at the intellectual level sufficient to know what is the question that people want to hear from Ron DeSantis. So they just speak from emotion and, oh yeah, I think that, and yeah, I feel that, and the woke, yeah, big problem, the woke, yeah, yeah, yeah. Talk to me about the woke. Could you say something about the woke? This is not how you ask questions in a professional setting. This is not how you drive a conversation to be the most interesting thing that 500,000 people will watch. this was not deserving of 500,000 people watching. There were about 300,000, and I guess that with the technical issues, it would have easily rose to 500,000 people if it wasn't of the technical issue. It is a painful platform and a painful format with painful people who, you know, I mean, call me nostalgic, but not everything was bad about the media in the 80s and the 90s. And there was something like a good interviewer in those years that we don't have anymore, that I've come to appreciate, that I've come to try to emulate with the public space. And holy shit, are we far from this? There was no one there to pull the best out of Ron DeSantis. I would have done a better job than David Sacks, who's supposed to be a professional. And did you hear so many of his questions? There was, he could repeat the word, I think, 5 times a sentence. I think that, and I think that the woke, and I think that, and so I think that kind of, and I think that. Holy shit, these people need some basic 80s level, like, interviewer talent type of training. Fuck them. Strange Channel says, I saw as large as 448K. I got in but could hear nothing. I saw you there, JF. It is painful. And all of this started with a Twitter space that no one could hear, that it was skipping. We were losing. We were losing the voice at any time, and we were hearing Elon Musk skipping and saying, "I think we might restart on some other channel." Holy shit! What kind of who programmed this crap? I'm sure that Odyssey has 1,000 times less the budget, and yet they can operate a stream correctly. They can attract talent here, and here we are. Well, and on terms of the ideology, so leaving aside all of the technical issues, I'm not super fascinated by what we're hearing from Ron DeSantis here. It's like, yeah, combating the woke, this is very much a center-right positioning. There is no policy in there that's different from what a Charlie Kirk would tell you. It's not fascinating. And on top of it, every single time he had a chance, he goes to do exactly what Trump was doing, which is come back to black people and how, you know, black people are doing good in Florida, and we're not even pursuing identity politics. But and he pulls like 3, 4, 5 statistics on black people and how he improved their lives, and then he goes on other subjects and he's like, oh yeah, DEI, we're not for this diversity crap in bureaucracy, and black people are doing better without it, and it's all. It's all what we're going back to the circle of Trump, of centrism, of Republican candidates trying to please the left. Ali Mayer says, welcome to philo-Semitic conservatism. I mean, that's what it is. And I would have liked to be there. I would have liked to be. And of course, one other thing that's annoying with the Twitter spaces is they give the illusion of inclusivity, but you always have the same friends always invited as speakers, and it's always the little gang that was pre-prepared, and there's nothing spontaneous about any of this. Christopher Ruffo was a collaborator of Ron DeSantis. Thomas Massey is a Republican congressman. It's all fake. It's all converging back to the fakeness that we criticized from mainstream media. If I was given the mic, if there was any chance, and I know there's none, but I would have asked Ron DeSantis, Ron, one of the big things that have annoyed me from Trump is this promise that Trump would kind of make himself the defender of white people in a nation in which they are being attacked, in a nation in which their safety, their position in society, all of their everything about white people is under attack. And yet, as soon as he got power, Trump was unable to ever say the word anti-white, recognize, acknowledge the attack that is currently happening against white people in America. Would you, Ron DeSantis, go a different way? Would you be able, instead of saying, I'm against racism everywhere and of all kind, just like Trump did, are you able to distinguish yourself here and recognize that white people in this country are under a special form of attack that requires a special form of response? Can we count on you, Ron DeSantis, to represent the interest of white people who consider themselves under attack in this country? Wouldn't that have been the best question in this entire shit show? It really doesn't matter how he responds to it. This is the key. When you lead a show, you need to bring the conversation on those uncomfortable spaces, uncomfortable spots where no matter what the other does, he's going to have to commit. He's going to have to fall one way or the other on your question. He's going to have to give something up and go forward in a direction. That's how you force the discussion to move ahead. Doubting Thomas says, Jeff, you mean that you were not satisfied with there were good people on both sides? No, that was nothing. That was nothing. No. Trump was always saying, at times you knew that he had it in his mind, white people. Because at times you would hear him in a discourse and he would say something like, and you know, these woke bureaucrats, they're becoming very racist towards certain people. I mean, and you knew that he was thinking white in his head, but he couldn't say it. I'd like to know if Ron DeSantis can say it. Or are we bound to always be cucked by whatever other race is fashionable to talk about in the current mediatic space? New Normal says Kyrgyzstan for the win. Kyrgyzstan has won tonight. It has won over Twitter space. James says, perfect question, because the commander-in-chief has the military power of the U.S., that should be the main question. How will you defend us? Yeah, it's not hard to come up with good interview skills, but you have to think about it. It's an art that is developed. You can't just chill and talk according to your emotions like you would with a loved one or a family or friends. That's not how it works. It's a talent, and it needs to be farmed and developed and cultivated. Meanwhile, we have massive censorship happening on the side of YouTube. They're going strong against the supporters of Robert F. Kennedy. YouTube just banned my channel and removed all my videos. Didn't tell me why. Probably my support for RFK Jr.'s campaign. The censorship continues. Matt Orfalea, after manually reviewing your video, we've confirmed that it isn't suitable for all advertisers, the unvaccinated. Okay, well, that's just that's not a ban. It's a removal of ads, but still, it's done in the same vein of censorship. So anyways, to finish my commentary on Twitter space, I want to say to Elon, and if Lorenza is up for clipping this, go ahead. That would be great to send this message to Elon on Twitter. Elon, I'm a streamer. I'm a professional, also manager of teams for programming. I could improve Twitter space. If you want to give me some engineers, I could work for you for free. I really want Twitter space to be better. So here's a couple of things you need to improve. You need to make Twitter Space, of course, the scalability issue, but that will come. You know, it's not the dramatic issue. You need to be able to send it to 500,000 people, 1,000,000 people, 5,000,000 people. But that is technical stuff that any engineer can fix eventually with the right resources. But you need to make Twitter Space a better environment for streamers. You need a web platform because you need to be able to stream from a desktop because you need good audio studio quality. You need better interfacing of the different audio streams of your different guests. You need a better app that people can manage guests better. You need a better chat. You need better super chat system. You need people to be able to send $5, $15 through Stripe instantly, get their message and appear on the show. You need a better management of the queue for people who are waiting in line because there's no way for them to track whether they will be invited, whether they will not. You need a system for the queue of speakers to favor diversity of the discussion. Because right now, it's always the friend host invites his friend accounts into his friend podcast. And this needs to change, and you can change it through programming. So, Elon, I offer you 6 months free of full-time work from myself. I will volunteer for Twitter. If you want to put me in charge of, if you want to give me some hands that can do stuff at Twitter, I can easily manage them at a distance from a remote location. Could be one engineer, could be a team. I don't know how many people you want to put on this. If you don't want my services, I understand, but please take my tips. Those are the 10 things you have to improve. You need a chat room. You need something that is more live than just tweets, that kind of stack. And you need tweets that can come out of the others through super chats, through money, so that there's more money flow toward Twitter. You need eventually video streaming to be integrated to your Twitter space. And you need all of the things that I just mentioned. If you want, I can help. I know how to take a team, get them to execute something. I'm a genius on this. People pay me sometimes because they're stuck. They're stuck and they don't know where to advance. And I know how to take a team, draw a plan for them, and say, this is what you need to do, and this is your deadline. So let me know if you're interested. Rodilacid says, Twitter could itself even be the payment processor. Maybe you could buy $100 Twitter coins. They hold them for some time, then distribute them as super chat. Yeah, there's many ways to go at it. Twitter probably doesn't... I don't know if this is in the short term what Elon Musk wants to do. Because if you start holding people's money, you become a bank very quick, and then the laws of banks start applying very quick. So I don't, but I know that it's the ultimate goal of Elon Musk for basically Twitter to be technically a bank and everything, basically everything. So you have to go at it with wisdom. You don't want Twitter to become a bank before it's viable to be it. So I don't know if Elon Musk would want us to take this this direction. But yes, you can have a credit in your account, and it allows you to make some super chats. Right now, it's unviable because there's dead hair, there is no talent, and the technicals of the platform are just not good. And that's why you always have an underrated quality. If I go on Twitter Space, I expect to have more variations of volume, less sound quality, more technical problems. All of this is expected. It's part of the package. It shouldn't be, because Twitter should be the greatest platform out there. It brings me no pleasure to inform you that our fellow white people are doing it again. Matt Murphy was saying the first step to fixing any problem is admitting you have one. We have a majority white people problem in America, and I'm going to keep calling out my fellow white people until we get our collective shit together. And 7 years ago, Matt Murphy was saying, I'm Jewish. And after that Trump speech, I need a shower. Oh, God. Oh, God. Isn't it amazing? He's playing totally within the meme. And apparently, based on this screenshot, this would be from 24 of May. That's today. So how can you in 2023 not be aware that fellow white people is not something you say, that it's a meme and that you're acting in line with the meme here? Rodi Lacid says, ICQ had better audio quality. Yes! ICQ with the little green flower. ICQ had better audio quality. Isn't that amazing? I have perfect audio quality. I can't even send it to Twitter Space because Elon wants everything to pass through phones. It's ridiculous. Terrified of a Bud Light situation, Target pulls Pride Month products in certain stores amid boycott calls. And is that Alex Stein? Alex Stein has apparently went into a Target and put on one of the whatever Pride swimsuit, female or not sure it's female swimsuit or all sex swimsuit, whatever it is, where male organs are popping out clearly. It's tuck friendly. Alex Stein is annoying. He's annoying. He's kind of funny and that he's trying to be silly and everything, but he's annoying as a thinker. He's annoying as a thinker. Meanwhile, Trump has published a video. It's like a video that says the real president is Trump. And I don't know if I can bring it to the screen here.
That I'm proud to be an American. And I won't forget the men who died.
We are kind of melting the servers.
And I'm proud to be an American. Where at least I know I'm free.
To freedom and is willing to put his money where his mouth is,
upset the narrative control imposed on us by our government.
Who gave that light to me, and I gladly stand up.
Have Governor DeSantis make this
USA! We're just trying to get it going.
Oh, God. It's nice memes, but Trump is not at the place where it matters. He's not in Twitter. So, like, this meme is going to underreach. You need people like me to be following Twitter, Trump's Telegram account to be aware of this. But so many people are not willing to be on Telegram and are not willing to be on Truth Social. So I do it because it's my job, but I don't think I would do it if it wasn't. But it's funny. It's funny to see Trump mocking the technical issues. Pierce Morgan, uncensored. Why would I care about what your skin color is? So he's interviewing this entitled black streamer who was walking into people's house. Now I understood what someone mentioned in the chat yesterday, that this guy got arrested. He got arrested. He got slapped on the wrist, a nothing burger punishment of $300-something. So $300. The problem being, of course, he's probably making more money just out of his accumulation of influence on the internet. So that's where it's ridiculous, where the legal system here is not punishing him strongly enough, because it's kind of not understanding that, hey, this is a business. Like, I could do all sorts of stupid shit that could get me slightly higher viewerships, you know? I won't do the stupid shit because I have morals, but also because the punishment would be greater than the reward. But this guy, the problem is that the punishment is smaller than the reward. At $300, well, 300 pound or whatever these English people trade with.
Yeah. Tell me about your life. What justifies this? What's happened to you that makes you think you're justified in doing this?
What do you mean, tell me about my life?
Well, you said you know nothing about your life. Tell me about your life.
Because I'm trying to get onto you because I'm black. Because I got.
Whoa. He asked you about your life. He did. There is no point at which Piers Morgan has said, you're trying to be on TV because you're black. Re-listen to this.
Yeah. Tell me about your life. What justifies this? What's happened to you that makes you think you're justified in doing this?
What do you mean, tell me about my life?
Well, you said you know nothing about your life. Tell me about your life.
Because I'm trying to get onto you because I'm black.
No. This guy has understanding issues. Did he have issues passing his reading test in England? Does he understand the English language? At no point is Piers Morgan suggesting by asking it. It's a very typical thing to be asking about people's life on an interview on TV. It's like, tell me a little bit about you. What led you to be that? What led you there? We want to know whether you're successful or whether you're a criminal like you, Mizzy. We always want to know, as a TV interviewer, what led to your current life. Tell me about your life. It's not a reference to your race.
Yeah. Tell me about your life. What justifies this? What's happened to you that makes you think you're justified in doing this?
What do you mean, tell me about my life?
Well, you said you know nothing about your life. Tell me about your life.
By the way, there's something so feminized with the English African. I don't know. It's like they're taking kind of the gayness of the English, you know, with the accent and everything, and the kind of feminized facial responses, the overdone accent, like exactly where I captured the screenshot here. You know, you will never see me do that much of a facial extension. With the lip here, eye, kind of so much expressionism in the face, so much emotion. Look at it's kind of the raised eyebrow, the raised lip. He's telling us something with each of his facial limbs. Eyes are saying something, eyebrow is saying something, the lip is saying something. He's standing in a feminized, critical way, kind of snobbing. What are you saying? Do you mean that it's because I'm... Holy shit. Do you mean that it's because I'm black that you ask about my life?
He's trying to get onto you because I'm black. Because I guarantee...
Because you're black?
Person, yeah, I guarantee... If
I don't give a
person,
damn about your skin color.
Really?
I guarantee... He was about to say, I guarantee you if I was a white person... What? If you were a white person, you wouldn't ask about your life. People ask about people's lives every day on television. That's like the most basic, empty question you can think of.
No! Why would I care of what color your skin is? Really? I just think you're an idiot.
Oh, thank you. I think you're an idiot, too.
That's fine. You're perfect.
Chuck Garrity says, I see what JF means. The guy is overly emotional and sensitive like a woman.
Definitely entitled to.
Yeah, this so is, are you. So
the show's
fine.
Called Uncensored. I think you're an idiot for what you've been doing. Okay. I also think you're an idiot for playing the race car when no one's
really?
Mentioned your skin color.
Really? Okay, you don't have to mention it to...
I don't care about your...
And see, he's trying to go... You don't have to mention it for it to matter. So he's trying to recruit the whole leftist woke team here of it doesn't matter if you don't say it explicitly. The racism is in the context. The racism is omnipresent. It is such a parasitic way of relating to wokeism And it's such an entitled, parasitic way. It's like, I deserve to have considerations of racism added to everything without even having to support it. That's what he's telling Piers Morgan here.
Skin color, Mizzy.
I
care about the fact that you've been terrorizing all these people for a sustained period of time. I also care about the fact you've only got a...
Absolute psychopath. He gets told that he's terrorizing people and he has no feeling about it. He's raising his eyes toward the ceiling.
I care about the fact that you've been terrorizing all these people for a sustained period of time.
You've been terrorizing... See, suddenly, no emotion. For someone who was expressing so much feminized emotion 30 seconds ago, he just gets put on the bench here and he gets told, you are hurting people. You are terrorizing people. And look at the facial expression, a active, intentional attempt, explicit attempt at blocking emotion. That is the complete reverse of what we've seen earlier. So he has emotion when it's about victimizing himself, but he has zero emotion when other people are victimized. That's why this guy, I say deeply, is a psychopath. He may not end up killing people in our current world, it depends, but the way in which he doesn't care about hurting people can easily lead this guy down the road of murdering someone within the next few years. Look at this. It even becomes even more. Like, this is what a child does when they are put in front of a block to their eternal capricious demons. It's like, yeah, I hurt people.
I also care about the fact you've only got a tiny fine today. No deterrent to you whatsoever. You don't show any real remorse. You don't really care, do you?
The UK laws are weak, simple as. And that's the UK laws are weak, simple as.
It's almost understandable how they speak, these English people. What he's saying is the UK laws are weak, simple as.
Remorse. You don't really care, do you?
The UK laws are weak, simple as. And that's not, the UK laws are weak, simple as. And that's not my fault.
Holy shit. This is worse than the Australian accent. The UK laws are weak, simple as, and it's not my fault. Aquanaut says, what is the background of this guy, JF? Who is he? Why is he being interviewed? On what topic? It's the guy who was entering people's home. If you've watched the shows of the last few days, he's a streamer who harasses people for fun on the streets. Does all sorts of psychopathic thing, but much more than the usual streamer joke, you know, much more than he does actual criminal stuff to create events, to acquire an audience. Now he got banned from TikTok, I believe. And now he has been arrested yesterday or 2 days ago. So that is the situation. His name is Mizzy. I don't know where he comes from. Mizzy has been fined £365, given a criminal behavior order, which bans him from posting social media posts without the person's permission. He also has a range of other restrictions on entering private properties and Westfield Shopping Center. And people were complaining here. Morgoth's review is complaining about the way in which he's arrested. It's weird because look at the police woman. She's kind of she looks like she's setting up for the recording and waiting for the cameras to be activated before she starts walking. But I'm not sure. She's also pointing something at the floor. There's something weird. And yes, her shoes are really weird. Are you fucking kidding me? Is that shoes that you wear as a police woman in England? What happens if your captive is running away from you? You can't catch anyone with this. you cannot run with this. What the fuck is this? And anyway, so look at the moment she waits. It seems she waits.
The movement is real.
So it looks like she's setting up for the camera and then walking like an actress. But I think that it's because it's poorly clipped. And the fact is she was waiting for something to be removed from the floor before she would advance. So I don't think it's acting or it's a false flag or whatever conspiracy theories people are developing around this. Yeah, photo op. No, I don't think it's the photo op. I think what's happening is she was waiting for some object to be removed for so that her risk would be abolished. Richard Anania claims missed by community notes. Research on parenting is hurt by genetic confounding. When you look at cross-adoption studies, you see parenting as a very small impact within the normal range. The paper linked to is particularly bad, just assertions with no evidence. This was starting from a tweet saying, this is completely false. Parenting has almost no impact on how kids turn out. And the community notes came in and said, parenting has a large impact on how kids turn out. I've talked about this problem in the past. I think that there is an interest in the Jewish academia to present parenting as unimportant. And I find this very annoying. I've seen Steven Pinker do that. And ultimately, my take many years ago, I had made a video about this. My take in summary ended up being, all of these studies that claim that parenting isn't important don't have the goods to show it. And so we have, basically, our studies are way too weak to capture the whole that parenting is. And when you see just social media videos of these fat women with their like 2-year-old, 3-year-old baby in their arm, fighting some other woman, calling them a bitch. And sometimes the baby just flying or being shook. You think this is not properly integrated in any scientific study I've ever seen. Like, you just can't capture this. We don't have this data. So I don't know what's the impact of the child, of the mother's behavior here. But I would guess it has to be bad. So my conclusion is the current scientific paradigm, that is the extent of data collection we do, is not good enough to exclude parental contribution being important. And I believe that parental contributions are important. Now, also, I believe that they are not necessarily not genetic. It's not because it's parental that it's not genetic. You can have genes that make you a good parent, that create a good environment for a child to grow in, and you could think of genes that make you a bad parent, that create a bad environment for the child. You can also have genes that have nothing to do with your parental behavior per se, but they still create a parental environment. For example, genes for economic success. If you have genes that somehow make you more intelligent or more performant on the workplace, and this allows you to make more money, and this allows you to raise better children, those are effectively good parent genes. Even if they don't give you a parent talent, they give you a better environment that you can provide to your children, and that's what parents do. That's what birds do when they create better nest for their babies. And that's why the birds that create the best nest get selected. The birds that create no nest at all, they get excluded from evolution. So it's a false dichotomy to think of parental contributions as being non-genetic. And it's also a false sense that the Steven Pinkers of this world have that science has excluded the importance of parenting. I think there's something very vicious in this pursuit of certain intellectuals to be to be pursuing this claim in front of, evidently, we don't have the data, we don't have the study, to truly ask the sum of all parental influences on a child's lives. How much do they matter? It is my sense that they must matter, given the just the amount of energy we waste on this. I mean, if it really didn't matter, why would we have evolved to care about it at all? We would let our children just go into the wild. Evidently, it has to matter in a way, perhaps in a way that cannot be captured by the science of today, that cannot be captured on a time slice where we gather some information from some family. But it has to matter, or else evolution would have kicked it out already. I mean, evolution will get rid of an organ if the organ doesn't serve any role anymore. If our entire parental care apparatus serves nothing, evolution would have dealt with it already. Tillman says, JF, I've seen a video of a 4 or 5 year old black boy telling a cop to shut the fuck up. Yes. This has to have passed through a parental influence of some kind, doesn't it? My crazy IRS case, Saturday, December 24, was one of the most memorable and most panicked days of my life. I spent Christmas Eve last year alone, frantically trying to put together what I thought was the most explosive of the Twitter file reports. My wife and children were due to arrive for Christmas the next day, and I spent the morning checking and rechecking a story I knew might make people upset. And eventually, he tells the story of the IRS production shows that the IRS opened its examination of Mr. Taibbi's 2018 tax return on December 24. Not only was the date Christmas Eve and a Saturday, but it was 2 days after he started being Elon Musk's favorite butt boy for the Twitter files export. Wow, that is an interesting fact. 2 days after he became the center of attention, the IRS starts investigating a 2018 tax report of his. Wow. It's hard to believe that that's random. That looks like something, an intentional retribution of some kind. Krashenstein, this guy, I can't believe this. The United States now believe that Ukraine's security services were most likely behind the drone attack on the Kremlin this month. Yeah, and they've denied this. See, they've denied this, but who was fooled by the denial? Well, maybe someone like Ed Krasenstein. I don't know. But it's like, it's not worth reporting that they're now admitting the truth that was obvious to everyone, that there is no one who had a legitimate doubt. This looks like either Ukraine or Ukraine plus US or US coaching Ukraine. You know, but you don't attack the Kremlin like this if you're not in that conflict. Anyways, Tesla plunges 50 spots to number 62 in new reputable brands survey, compounding Tesla woes from Tuesday after transportation czar Mayor Pete made comments that took aim at the company's autopilot software. It was also reported that Tesla's place on the Axios Harris Poll 100 reputation rankings dropped 50 places this year, based on a survey of 16,000 Americans from a nationally representative sample. Americans are asked which two, in their opinion, stand out as having the best reputation. Well, it's kind of a tricky question, the best reputation. Because, of course, all of the standing up that Elon Musk does for free speech can legitimately lead you to have a different view of his reputation. Perhaps you see Elon Musk as more hated. And so if you call me and you say, all right, we're doing a survey, what do you think is the reputation of Tesla? Well, maybe the reputation of Tesla isn't as good, but that doesn't mean I disagree with what Elon Musk is doing. This man was trying to snatch kids from a park in Bolton yesterday, but has only been arrested for common assault. Be careful. Bobby Haywood's park took a kid, wouldn't let him go, and took him to the garage to buy him a new ball when his family realized he wouldn't let him go and said he could pay cash or card for the little boy and went for everyone else's children on the park trying to hit parents to get them. He's been arrested, but no doubt he'd be back out in under 24 hours. Yeah, you have to be careful. With children, you have to be fully within reach at all time. Absolutely. There is no getting out, and there is no trusting a stranger. I don't understand exactly what's written there. Are they saying that they've trusted this guy to go buy a ball for the child? You don't trust anyone to be within reach of your child in a way that would give them access to them to kidnap them. Crypto exchange Bitrex files for bankruptcy after SEC complaint. Cryptocurrency exchange Bitrex Inc. filed for bankruptcy protection on Monday, 3 weeks after the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission accused it of operating an unregistered securities exchange. Man, that sucks. This administration is going after everything Bitcoin. I'm sure that the Bitrex people are honest people, but they get targeted with these technical rules and they make life unviable for all platforms. That is really too bad, man. We're losing more and more things because of the state attack on crypto. Not because of any wrongs on their side. Binance Canada had no problem. There was no one saying, I got my money stolen by Binance Canada. And yet they close because they are getting attacked by the state. And now we have Bitrate gets attacked by the state, declares bankruptcy. NVIDIA explodes to new all-time high on blowout earnings, guides 50% above estimates. Yeah, I'm a big fan of NVIDIA. I think it's great. It's great that we have this high technology company that's developing the GPUs of the future. It's very essential for gaming performance and the whole generation of virtual worlds by computers. So I'm happy about NVIDIA being successful. James says, your genes almost deserve it at this point. Yeah, if you leave your child unsupervised, absolutely. And two more news items before we close the show. Apparently, Jeff Bezos. Look, Jeff, I have great respect because Jeff Bezos Amazon is where you can get the revolutionary phenotype, and I've always been extremely happy with Jeff Bezos basically giving the chance to small authors to build their following and make money from his website, really. I made a living from Amazon for years. But here, Jeff, here's where I disagree. He has made his marriage party, apparently, or whatever, engagement party with his wife. And the ex of his wife was invited at the party. So she gets to have the rich man and the more muscled man around her to... Is that some cuckoldry trip that's in the head of Jeff Bezos? I don't know. But there I disagree. Now, I don't know what's the situation. They say, including Sanchez's ex, Tony Gonzalez, father of her oldest son, Nico. So when there's children in the picture, you might be tolerating the fact that, oh, well, this girl had a child before, so the child must be with his father. But still, I feel that there's something very cuckoldry oriented when I see him naked right there with her taking a picture of him and Jeff Bezos being, huh? John Drake says he's insane getting ready to marry a barren 53-year-old woman. Oh yeah, that is absolute insanity. That is absolute insanity. No hope of reproduction whatsoever. What the fuck are you doing, Jeff Bezos? What is this? Like, I don't like the MG Tao philosophy, but if you've had your children, and if all you have on the table is a 53-year-old woman who anyways will not give you children, then why wouldn't you enjoy being a lone male for the rest of your life? I mean, you made it, man. You got peace. You have reached peace. You have done what you had to do in terms of reproductive career. I don't even know, does he have children? But, you know, whatever amount of children he has, it's not going to increase going further with a 53-year-old woman. So what the fuck are you doing? Why would you want a 53-year-old woman around you? Aquanote says, JF, Jeff Bezos lives in such a bubble of wealth to be completely unable to see that white people are under attack. Hence why he feels no urgency to make more babies. Well, yeah. I can understand this, and then he would be misinformed and, you know, disconnected from reality. I could take this. But how can you be so stupid as to marry a 53-year-old woman? What is the purpose of a 53-year-old woman? What is the purpose of sacrificing potentially your wealth to this woman when she divorces you? Companionship? JF said, oh yeah, that's me. Nick is right here. I stand for gun rights for deontological reasons. But the fact is, in most situations, as he describes, guns won't save you and might even at times worsen your situation. On top of it, they have become virtually unusable in leftist states. I think we should harshly defend gun rights. But we should also not deceive ourselves into thinking that guns are always a positive solution. The fact is, there's many situations in which the gun will put you in more trouble than you would be without it. Now, I'm all for absolute advocating for deontological reasons. You should have the right to defend yourself, and we should defend that right very harshly. But let's be pragmatic also about the reality and not deceive people into thinking that carrying a gun everywhere is an all-in solution. It is not. And so people were critical of Nick Fuentes for saying this.
Not be able to take away guns, but instead they'll make it impossible for anyone to even use them to protect themselves. Absolutely defenseless people don't even realize this.
Dude, the guns don't matter. Like, that's the thing. People that talk this way don't understand how firearms work. In almost any situation, it really doesn't even matter. It's not to say that you shouldn't have that precaution, but here's how it happens. If you're in Chicago and a car full of black people with tinted windows pulls up and they jump out to mug you, in that situation, it's really not going to matter that you have a gun, actually. I know it may come as a surprise to people, but unless we're talking about a quick draw, like a cowboy, like, you're really kind of fucked.
He's right. And if you are swarmed by like dozens of people, the problem is you might get a couple of them, but eventually they will get to you. So that's always the problem. Not everyone is a straight shooter like Elon Musk's father, who was able to shoot 3 home invaders with 2 bullets. That is kind of lucky, rare situation, and thankfully those situations do exist. But in general, it's not always a good idea. It's not always going to turn to your advantage to have a gun. Now, now this is fucking hilarious. I want to end with this. Trump has just published on his Telegram channel a visual illustration of the Ron DeSantis campaign. A Elon Musk rocket that has failed. Wow. You have to give it to whoever does the thinking for Trump marketing. Quite brilliant. Thank you.